A mobile shaped like two speech bubbles spins in front of a white background. In the bubbles, yellow letters spell the word pathé with an exclamation mark. The shadow of a cockerel glides across the background. Pathé Pictures presents, in association with the UK Film Council and Film 4, and in association with Inside Track, a free-range film. Views of still, sun-dappled woodland. A young couple with small rucksacks on their backs are standing in a wide, sloping green field in the middle of the countryside. Joe's in his 30s, tall and athletic with short light brown hair and glasses on. Claire is slim and in her late 20s with long, dark, curly brown hair. Both are wearing jeans and t-shirts. They gaze quietly at the dense woods and rolling hills in the distance, under a bright but cloudy sky.
Wow.
Claire walks over and stands beside Joe. Joe lays a small white tablecloth on the ground and Claire empties some packs of sandwiches out of her rucksack and hands Joe a bottle of water.
Thank you.
Claire lies down on the cloth opposite Joe, who's kneeling. A distant view shows the pair of them, a little island of humanity in the vast green field.
This is bliss.
Claire makes herself comfortable, propped up on her side with her head resting on her hand. Joe regards her for a moment, then separates two plastic glasses, blows in one, and hands it to her.
Take this.
Claire takes the glass and sits up. Joe pulls a bottle of champagne out of his rucksack and gazes thoughtful at the classy brown label on the bottle before peeling off the foil.
Looks posh.
It's the poshest of the posh. It's really difficult.
Claire sees a hot air balloon landing.
No. I wanted, I think it was going to be like this, but...
The red balloon crashes into the field and a man falls out. The grey-haired man grabs onto a rope that's trailing behind the balloon's basket. Joe gets up.
Run that!
There's a young lad in the basket, which is being dragged along the ground after the balloon. Joe and Claire run towards it.
Run that, help!
The ripcord! Pull the ripcord!
A doctor driving past the field stops his car and jumps out to help. A farmer comes running, and a blonde man appears in the field from another direction. Joe and the granddad are joined by the other three men, who cling onto the rope and basket as it scuds across the ground. The boy pulls a hand valve attached to the burners and the balloon lifts off the ground. Everyone clings on except granddad, who runs along behind. The doctor hangs onto the rope, the others pull down on the basket and the balloon comes back onto the ground. Grandad reaches for the ripcord. The balloon is at a 45-degree angle to the ground. The boy stands up in the basket as Joe and the others hold it steady.
What's your name?
Harry.
We're going to get out.
Harry's granddad starts to help him out. Joe glances over his shoulder as the wind strengthens, rustling the leaves on the trees. The others follow his gaze. Claire looks on in horror as a gust of wind hits the balloon, knocking Harry back into the basket. The balloon lifts quickly off the ground with the men clinging to it. Joe, the farmer, and Harry's granddad are holding onto the basket's rope handles. The blonde-haired man and the doctor are clinging onto the long trailing rope. Joe looks down at the ground, which is receding fast beneath his dangling feet as they rise higher and higher. Silently comprehending their predicament, the men start to let go and drop heavily to the ground. The farmer is first, followed by Joe, then the blonde man, and finally Grandad, landing heavily on the grass. Claire comes running across the grass to Joe's side as the four dazed men get slowly to their feet and gaze up at the balding doctor, who is still clinging to the balloon's rope. They stand silently, helplessly, and watch the struggling figure dangling at the end of the rope below the wicker basket as the silky red balloon sails slowly and majestically into the distance. Frightened, Harry is huddled in the corner of the basket. Clinging to the rope, the doctor gazes up at the basket, then loosens his grip, slithering down the rope before letting go. sheep in the field far below scatter as the doctor plummets towards the ground. Joe and Claire are at their friends Robin and Rachel's house, sitting around a table by candlelight as Joe relates what happened.
His name was John Logan. He was a GP from Oxford. Had a wife and a small child.
Fuck.
Rachel shoots Robin a sidelong glance and the four continue with their meal.
Now maybe he thought it was his duty.
He felt obliged to kill himself.
Not exactly in the Hippocratic Oath, is it?
Exactly. He's just a good bloke.
Claire drains her glass of red. Robin looks down at his plate.
Well, I couldn't have done it.
You would have done the same.
I couldn't. I'm a born coward.
Joe smiles. Joe takes a large gulp of wine and puts down his glass.
He just hung there for a few seconds. Like he was going to flap his arms and fly away like a cartoon.
Bugs Bunny.
Tom and Jerry.
Tweety Pie.
Tweety Pie.
Claire rests her head against Joe's shoulder for a second.
But he didn't, did he?
Back to the moment in the field when Joe, Claire and the others are watching Dr. Logan fall. Claire looks away and Harry's granddad drops to his knees and curls up in a ball.
I mean, what do you do? It's like suddenly I was the leader.
Harry, what a ride.
These people need my help. Well, shit like that.
Oh, no, you were. You were like
a mummy.
Zombie.
Yeah.
You were.
I mean, there was a body to be found. Work to be done.
There might be something we can do. And he might not be dead.
Claire watches open-mouthed as Joe sets off determinedly across the field. Jed, the blonde man who joined the rescue attempt, follows Joe at a distance, down a grassy path to a field with sheep in it. Jed is tall with straggly, collar-length blonde hair and stubble. He wears an open white shirt over a t-shirt and jeans. He follows Joe into the field and down a grassy slope. They come across the doctor's body from behind. He seems to be sitting on the grass, but as they get nearer, they can see his crumpled torso and his legs splayed out at odd angles, displaying a ruptured stomach and mangled left thigh. Joe and Jed stand and stare.
Do you think he's dead?
But, you know, in a funny way, I knew what he meant, because I kept on expecting him to get up, walk away. I don't know.
Maybe he was in shock.
Joe considers this.
I was in shock.
He sits back in his dining chair.
I'm in shock now.
In the field, Joe puts his hand on Jed's shoulder.
There's not a lot we can do now.
Jed steps closer.
We can pray.
Joe stares at him.
I find it helps, times like this.
Well, it's really not my thing.
I think you really need to.
Oh, sorry, no.
You, please.
If you need to, then go ahead.
Why won't you?
Well, don't you think he prayed?
Jed half smiles, then glances at the dead doctor again.
Please.
Jed gets onto his knees and looks expectantly up at Joe.
Please?
Joe smiles awkwardly. Joe gets slowly down onto his knees near Jed, who gazes appreciatively at him, then starts to pray. Joe stares at the dead Dr. Logan, whose crumpled figure sits opposite him. Sheep graze around them, and people get out of a police car which is pulled up on a path near the field.
What happened to the boy?
He pulled himself together, brought the balloon down in a field 5 miles away.
Rachel looks appalled.
So the doctor died for nothing?
Oh, that's terrible.
It doesn't make any sense, does it?
You tried, you did the best you could.
Claire hugs Joe.
You're so brave. Isn't he brave?
I'd have been a gibbering wreck.
I am a gibbering wreck.
Yeah, I'd have started shrieking. Running around wringing my hands and twisting my ankle.
Sorry.
Claire gazes anxiously at Joe by the light of the flickering candles. He's staring into space across the dinner table.
But I let go of the rope. I let go.
Yeah, but if you hadn't...
Yeah, but I let go.
If you hadn't, I'd be sitting here without you.
Yeah, but if I hadn't have let go... None of us had let go. We could have brought that balloon down.
Rachel gazes sympathetically at Joe across the table. Robin, too, glances up at Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry. She's teasing.
Rachel leaves the candlelit room.
Listen, you flew through the air. You were actually airborne. It was an airborne rescue attempt. You know, you wrestled with the gods and you lived. Compared to most people, you were a fucking action hero.
It was the wind. It was the wind.
Would you stop saying that? It wasn't the fucking wind.
Joe reaches sullenly for his cigarettes. An overview of the candlelit dinner table in the darkened room draws back as if tethered to a balloon, which is rising away from the table. The image starts to spin and turns into an overview of Joe and Claire in bed, under plain bed covers, asleep. Joe suddenly sits up. The view of the bed continues to spin around dizzyingly as Claire sits up and reaches out to Joe. She hugs him to her. In the bathroom, mid-shave, Joe is staring at the blisters and rope burns on his left hand. Claire stands behind him, running her hands through his hair and kissing his back. At work, Joe lectures a large class of college students.
When we say we're in love, what does it mean? Could it be that this complex, dazzling, transformative feeling is just an illusion?
Joe contemplates his students.
Could it be just a trick played on us by nature just to make us fuck? We imagine that love is meaningful, but could it in fact be meaningless?
A guy puts up his hand.
Spud, how's your love life?
Spud is looking a little embarrassed. Later, Joe is sitting by a large window in an empty classroom writing at his laptop. He stops and looks out of the window. He watches a little girl let go of a red helium balloon shaped like a frog's head. The balloon lifts up into the air and passes Joe's window. He watches it rise. The balloon sails up above the college and the tops of trees into the wide blue yonder. At home, Joe's in his office space, which is on a mezzanine floor. He pushes himself along the landing in a chair on wheels and thinks back to the moment the red balloon lifted off the ground with he and the others clinging to it. He sits at his desk, drawing cartoon hot air balloons in a notebook and writing captions like, "Don't let gravity get you down." He rips the page out of the notebook and stares at the rope burns on his left hand, then clenches his fist and draws another balloon before crossing it out, ripping out the page, crumpling it up and tossing it away. With a cigarette in his mouth, he leans against a table and stares up at the skylight. Joe comes downstairs and gazes at a teardrop-shaped brown and white vase on a shelf. He turns the vase upside down so that it looks more like a hot air balloon. He does the same to a red apple in the fruit bowl. Joe searches kitchen shelves and several drawers and eventually finds a small pack of balloons. He blows up a green one. He ties a knot in it, stands on a chair, holds the balloon up, and lets it go, watching it fall. Joe is floating the balloon with a hairdryer. He switches it off and answers the phone.
Hello!
Hello, mate. It's Jed. You know, from the balloon.
Hi! How did you get this number?
The police gave it to me.
So, what's the problem?
I was wondering whether you'd like to meet up.
Actually, you know, I'm really, really busy at the moment. In fact, I'm just right in the middle of something now, so...
I really wouldn't mind talking about this, you know.
Talking about what?
Oh, you know, things. What are you doing now? I know you're busy. I know this is a bit forward of me. Look, I'll make you a promise. Just see me this once, yeah, and I'll never bother you again. That's a solemn promise, do you know what I mean? I just really think we should talk about what happened. I mean, what was all that about, eh? Fuck. It's like, you know, fuck.
Joe narrows his pale blue eyes.
Where are you?
I can come to you.
No. Just tell me where you are.
I'm in the park across the street.
Joe gazes out of the window at the park. Joe crosses the street to the park. Jed is leaning on a bench. He stands up.
Hey.
Jed smiles shyly and shakes Joe's hand.
Good to see you, Jed. How you doing?
Jed.
Sorry?
Jed Paddy.
Sorry, Jed. How are you? Hi.
Hi.
So?
Well, there's a calf up the road. Cook a blind and fry you.
Oh, no, I've already had breakfast. I'm fine, thank you.
Well, I'd rather go inside. You know what I mean? It's quite important.
Can't you tell me here?
You know what I'm talking about. Do you want me to spell it out?
I think I would, actually. I'm a bit in the...
Come on, Joe, be a sport.
Look, I've got a lot of work to
Nonsense.
Do.
Nonsense.
No, I have. I'm very busy. I'm right in the middle of something at the moment. I don't know what this is really about.
Pretend you don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't.
Why can't you just say it? Just say it. Open up to me.
Look, thanks, but, I've got to go and do something else. Right.
Well, bye then.
Okay. See ya. Bye.
Jed looks as though he might like to say more.
Bye.
He smiles instead and watches Joe walk away. Joe glances back and waves before letting himself into his building. Jed looks away, bitterly disappointed. Joe looks out of a window on the stairs. Jed is standing in front of the park railing, staring back at Joe's house. A woman's shopping bag tears and oranges go all over the pavement. A passerby stops to help, but Jed mooches off. Claire and Joe are at an exhibition in Tate Britain.
He's just sort of weirdly familiar, like he knows me, or we're old friends or something.
Yeah, maybe he's lonely.
They enter a white painted gallery.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Just lonely.
They contemplate a tree-shaped exhibit with clusters of red fruit.
It's very friendly.
This sounds nice.
Claire wanders off, leaving Joe staring at the large cluster of red fruit around the tree trunk. One of the fruits is balloon-shaped.
Joe?
Joe continues to stare. At college, Joe talks to Spud after class.
So, we say art is just an evolutionary tool.
Perhaps all sorts of complex human behaviour serve the same purpose. Perhaps moral behaviour is another one. Fairness, kindness, self-sacrifice.
So it's nothing to do with character or personality or, you know, simple goodness.
Maybe that's an illusion too.
Wow.
Spud smiles and shakes his head.
That's excellent.
An image of the Doctor falling. Joe sits on a diving board staring at a swimming pool. Joe and Claire are in Pizza Express with another man.
She's kind and bright. And she has a good sense of humour. And the trouble is, she only speaks Polish.
Where did you meet her?
She's the au pair.
Joe glances surreptitiously at Claire, who looks uncomfortable.
Classy. It's very classy.
But she is so much more than that.
Their dark-haired companion raises his eyebrows and grins.
You're my sister. Supposed to say something nice.
Claire and Joe walk home.
Fucking hell.
When we get married, if we get married,
yeah.
I have so many children, if you left me the chance for it, could you? I mean, what if you run off with the au pair anyway?
They kiss, traffic glides by.
We haven't got an au pair.
I mean, if we get one.
Depends what she looks like.
In the bathroom at home.
You might be tempted.
Can't imagine that happening.
Well, how can you be sure?
No, I can't imagine being tempted.
Oh.
Claire washes her hands and watches Joe brushing his teeth.
I don't want to leave it too late, you know. Procreation and
that stuff. Well, yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
I know we have come to it.
But now?
Mm.
Joe climbs on top of Claire on the bed.
Psst.
Jed has taken a surprise Polaroid of Joe in a bookshop.
I thought you said we weren't going to see each other again.
Haven't you got something to say to me?
You've got to stop following me like this. This is getting a bit weird.
Well, why don't you write it in your lovely book? Go on, no one can see.
Joe takes a copy of his novel from Jed.
Yeah, well, OK.
It's entitled Simpatico, The Art and Science of Love and Understanding. Joe gets a pen out of a bag and, shaking his head, writes something on the inside cover.
How's that?
Why can't you write it down? I think you know.
Jed, I don't know what this is all about, but
Jed,
it's,
Jed, it's...
What?
Jed. Jed. You signed it to Jez. Jed.
Sorry.
Joe corrects the name.
Okay.
Joe walks to the other end of the bookshop. Jed follows him.
Were you christened Joe or Joseph?
What?
It's nothing to be ashamed of. Joey. Jojo. Don't you think it's time you faced up to who you really are?
Who I am? Well, I don't... sorry.
The fruit of the Spirit is love.
What?
Love. Galatians chapter 5.
Oh, Jesus, no.
Joe leaves the shop.
Joe,
it's like...
What have I done to you?
Why
are you
to
keeping
me?
This up? I can't control my emotions as well as you can. I know this gives you power over me, but there's nothing I can do about it. But please, please, don't put on this act.
What act?
If this is a joke, it's got to stop. It's hurting us both, Joe. It's doing us harm.
Look,
and it's
look,
fucking
I really
us
don't
up.
Know who you are, and I don't know where you live, and I don't know what you want, really, and quite frankly, I don't care. So, could you please just leave me alone?
God, you say that, and that, then you make that face.
What
face? Is it you really want me to do?
What do you really want me to do?
Well, you're not even trying to be convincing, Joe. It's obvious.
Joe stares at Jed.
Okay. If there's something I've done that's upset you, or I've said something that's given you an idea, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But whatever it is, I'm sorry. I'm really, truly sorry. Now, I just don't know what you're on about. I don't know what this is about.
Joey. Joseph. Sorry.
Jed follows Joe back into the shop.
Don't do this. Please, don't
let me down, Joe.
What do you mean?
Don't let me down. Look, you let down the other block.
What?
Be brave.
What do you mean, be brave? What do you mean?
Brave. You know what I'm saying.
Joe's face falls.
I didn't let him down. What do you say?
Joe's lips quiver.
It was all of us.
Jed turns and walks away.
Well, wasn't it?
Joe watches Jed leave the shop and walk away. Claire is making a sculpture of Robin's face.
I see my work as part of a tradition that goes back to the great sculptors of the Renaissance.
Robin's reading a review.
I didn't say that.
Says who?
Not like that, anyway.
She glances up at Robin.
I can't see you.
Sorry.
Okay.
He lowers the paper and takes off his black-rimmed glasses.
I love your voice.
Yeah.
I wish I could sculpt your voice.
I do. Is there anything I can do?
No, because the more you talk, the more frustrated I get.
Look, I won't say another word.
Thank you. think I'm done for today.
Joe comes into Claire's studio.
Here we are.
Hi.
Oh. Hiya. Posing again?
Yeah.
He's a grandfather.
And far.
Oh, yeah. Ridiculous, but true. It's the other lot, you know, Mary.
He's a gene machine. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How you do it.
It's easy, I'll teach you.
You know, you're going to get a reputation.
At my age, I deserve a reputation.
Congratulations, that's very good news.
Thank you.
Now, fuck off, you're way too happy.
Good luck to Rachel, yeah?
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Claire has been working on a bust of Robin in clay.
So what do you think?
Joe, who's wearing a dark suit jacket and jeans, walks round the sculpture, which is on a small table.
It's good.
What's wrong with it?
No, it's good. It's really good.
What?
We did talk about this, you know.
What?
Well, why can't you do that for me?
Claire wraps up the sculpture.
I cast your hands.
You cast every fucker's hands. I mean, any idiot can get his hands done.
Well, hands aren't so personal.
What's wrong with the rest of me?
I'm only interested in your hands.
Thanks a lot.
I like your hands. Anyway, they're nice and bony.
Bony, you want? You should do my feet. My feet are really
I don't do
bony.
Feet. Anyway, it's not the same.
Why can't you do my face, hey? Why?
I don't know. I can't explain. It's...
Well, try.
No, it's just... It's hard to articulate. I'm just too close to you, I suppose.
How can you be too close to me, then? What is too
I need
close
objective.
Mean?
I mean
what does that mean?
I need distance. I'd have to examine you, and I don't want to examine you. I want you to be my lover, not my subject, okay? Now, what's wrong?
Claire stands close to Joe and gazes up at him. Joe avoids eye contact and steps away, then turns back to her.
Saw that guy again today.
I think
he's some kind of fan. It's just...
It's a bit weird.
Yeah, well, he's quite intense.
No, just ignore him, okay?
No, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure he's harmless. It's just... Hey, I feel a bit sorry for him, really. He's a bit lonely, I think.
Don't let it bother you.
No. No, of course not. You can't help feeling responsible.
You were just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, but I can't help thinking that we might have saved him.
I don't think so.
Well, he thinks so.
But how?
He said so. It's...
In a helicopter? Oh, come on. There's no way you should feel responsible.
I just wish I'd been able to do something. I wish we'd saved him. I really wish we had, because, you know, it would just be so much easier now.
Why? I say you wouldn't feel so bad.
No, because he fucking died.
Joe leans against a table and Claire stands in front of him and rubs his arms.
I just...
Come here. Look at me. You are such a good person, okay? Just a little bit overwrought. Stressed out and sad. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm. I love you. Come here.
She hugs him tight. Joe is walking across the Millennium Bridge, heading for the looming tower of the Tate Modern Building on the south bank of the Thames. Inside the Tate, Joe walks along a corridor with his young agent, Toby.
I'm saying all these things have meaning, but they only have meaning because we as human beings give them meaning.
That's your theory. Life is a meaningless Darwinian expedient. It's just biology, but humans struggle to give it meaning.
Yeah, that's what makes us human.
That's a good theory. Simple but effective.
Good.
In the Tate restaurant.
It's revolutionary. I should be on the fucking South Bank show.
Well, okay, why don't we talk about that?
Talk about what?
Getting you on TV.
Well, we should. I think it's important. I should, you know, put myself together. Just do something constructive instead of sitting on my fucking arse. I need to do things. I'll never do anything.
You do loads of things. What are you talking about?
All I do is pontificate about... I have never, ever made anything that you can hold in your hand. I've never helped anybody. I just have theories.
But they're good theories. Perhaps you should get more with them. I don't know, maybe we could... This is silly. Why are you saying all this?
Joe smiles, casting his eyes about the room. His face suddenly hardens.
For fuck's sake. What? You must stop meeting like this.
Jed opposite smiles demurely.
Don't you ever go home.
Jed to Toby.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's all right, Joel. I'm preparing myself to forgive you.
This is insane. What do you want?
You know what I want.
No, not now. For fuck's sake, I am having my lunch. This is just fucking stupid.
Good enough, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yes, look.
No, I'm really sorry, man. This is one of my minivans. Very quick. You're a shrewd one, aren't you?
Look, go away, please.
Come on, Joe.
Jed shoots Joe a cheeky grin.
Joe.
Look, stop calling me that, please.
Just listen.
No, okay. I am not listening. Look, please, just piss off. This is driving me fucking mad.
We can't go on like this, Joe. Just give in to it. You can't live your life in denial.
I'm not in denial.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
You are.
Look, I'm not in denial. I don't even know you, you mad bastard.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You do.
I don't.
I think you do.
Jed eyes Joe tenderly.
Better than you think.
Joe jumps up.
Joe, cool it.
People in the restaurant look on as Joe stands stiffly eyeballing Jed. Jed moves off.
Cool it, man. Good idea.
Joe watches as the ungainly Jed slopes off up a corridor, passing in front of a woman as she's about to take a photo. He apologises and continues on his way. Joe watches, then, with an embarrassed look about, pushes his glasses onto his nose and sits.
I'm sorry. It really pisses me off.
What's he done?
Doesn't matter.
Well, no. It obviously does.
Please.
Joe busily consumes the food on his plate. Toby eyes him dubiously.
How's Glenn?
Ignoring the question, Joe chews hungrily, pronging more food with his fork.
Nice piece in The Guardian. She must be thrilled about the award.
Toby watches Joe, fidgets awkwardly, then reaches for his wine.
You both must be thrilled about it.
Great. Very good.
Joe bites a chunk of food from his fork and chews aggressively, then looks over his shoulder towards the corridor. Joe follows Claire through a foundry.
I mean, why is he following you anyway? I don't... What have you done?
I haven't done anything.
Well, you must have done something, or he wouldn't be following you.
Well, he just, you know, he... What do you like? You know, he just turned up.
Careful, OK?
Yeah, turned up and I recognised him, and I smiled at him.
Why?
Well, why not?
Well, you don't even know him. Why are you going to smile at him?
Well, I feel sorry for him, that's all.
Well, don't encourage him, OK?
She examines a huge bust.
That's ready to be dipped.
Hi, darling.
Thank you.
I've just been friendly to the guy, you know. We've both been through this, like, really, like, awful, awful experience. It's been really, you know,
Joey,
I mean...
Joey, I'm at work, okay?
What?
I'm
trying to explain to you that it's, like, it's just really difficult. It's because nobody understands.
I do understand.
Do you?
Do
you
yes.
really understand me?
Would you want me to talk to him?
No, of course I don't.
No, I want to talk to him.
I don't
him.
Want you to talk to
him. I want to find out what his problem is.
There isn't a problem. There's no fucking problem. It's fine.
Maybe he's suffering from post-traumatic stress
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it probably is, yeah.
You know, maybe you both are.
She follows him into a workshop.
No? I think you need to see somebody and talk about all this.
I'm talking to you about
no,
it. I want
somebody
to...
professional.
He stares at her aghast.
Professional.
Claire nods, then puts her hand to his cheek.
Why won't you let me talk to him?
Because I don't want you to.
Joe pulls away from her and walks off. Chastened, Claire ponders for a moment, then sighs. Joe trudges down a busy street, too deep in thought to notice his surroundings. His features bleached white by bright sunshine, Joe stops in his tracks and stares down at the road. A thought strikes him and he jerks up his head, his eyes taking in the passing traffic. He turns around on the spot, looking about, brow pinched, lips pursed in contemplation. Behind the wheel of his car, an unsmiling Joe sternly contemplates the road ahead as he drives up the M40. He catches sight of two hot air balloons floating over the fields in the distance. Leaves of trees are reflected in the windscreen as he turns his head away. Joe drives through the streets of Oxford. College buildings and rows of bicycles replace the leaves on the windscreen. Joe's at a reception desk. Etched on a window is the name NewsQuest. The woman at reception indicates behind Joe and he turns and follows her gaze. He scratches his ear and walks in the direction she pointed. Another woman carries a bundle of newspapers to him, now sitting at a table. He thumbs through the copies of the Oxford Mail. He reads a headline, GP dies in freak balloon accident. Joe visits the doctor's widow and sees a photograph of the doctor, John Logan, leaning against a Red Cross Land Rover in a desert. There's one of the doctor and his wife, Jean.
He was always tripsing off somewhere, having adventures. Orphanages in Yugoslavia and inoculation safaris in Uganda. And very gung-ho. When you think about it, he was bound to die rescuing somebody.
Jean wipes the kitchen worktop.
It was instinctive.
She spoons coffee into two cups.
Or reckless.
You know, I think he was unlucky.
Joe scratches his cheek and walks towards her.
Unlucky.
Yes, I do. I think that, if we'd all been able to keep hanging on,
He folds his arms and watches her guiltily.
Somebody let go. And then we all had to let go.
She looks up at him.
If they hadn't, I think we might have saved him. I need to find out who let go first.
Jean lays down the plastic milk bottle, her face slowly crumples, and she shakes her head as she turns to Joe.
I wish you hadn't told me that.
I'm sorry.
There was one. Someone with my husband on the day he died. Did you notice? There was someone with him in the car when he stopped, and there was someone who got out with him, and then that someone vanished.
The car was on the far side of the field. I only really noticed your husband when we were running towards the balloon.
Did you see the car?
Well, yes, but I wasn't.
Can you remember? Was there one car door open or two?
What?
She stares at him through her dark eyes.
Was there one or two?
I think...
His arms are still folded. He raises his right hand thumb upwards as he thinks.
No. I can't remember, I'm sorry.
He affects a smile. In the dining room, two girls are sitting on the floor playing as Jean lays a carrier bag on the table in front of Joe.
Tell me what it is. Go on, it won't bite.
Joe grins awkwardly, then reaches into the striped plastic bag. Jean, her straggly black hair tied up and with dark circles under her eyes, watches as he removes a pack of sandwiches, then two overripe bananas, a bottle of wine, and a scarf.
It was on the floor by the passenger seat.
Yeah.
We're going to have a picnic. Smell it.
He sniffs the scarf.
It's rose water. I've never used rose water in my life.
She takes the chiffon scarf from him and repacks the bag. He looks at her stern face and laughs nervously. She sits down.
If you saw something, please don't feel you have to protect me. If you saw her,
no, I need to know. I did not see your husband.
I need to know how long it was going on. I need to know how much it
meant to him. But how do you know it was going on? This doesn't mean
anything. You didn't know my husband.
This could just be... Well, has he...
No. I didn't mean that. I mean, if you knew him, you'd know. He doesn't take risks. He was afraid of heights. He wouldn't have taken a risk unless... Well... Unless he was showing off. It was quite a show off. When we were young. You know, when I was young. When I was worth showing off to. He was showing off to a girl.
She nods her head repeatedly. Her daughter looks across the room at her.
Well, maybe, she might try and get in touch because it might
be. If she comes near this house. I'm going to kill her. God help me, but I will. I'll kill her.
Her daughter and her friend both now stare at Jean. One eats an apple. Joe drives along a single carriageway country road bordered by fields. At a junction he turns left, then almost immediately right. The fields on either side are green with vehicle tracks in them. Some run parallel to the road. There are trees and hedges lining the road. Joe walks across a field, his jacket slung over his shoulder as the sun shines down on him. He stops in the middle of the field. Ahead of him a cluster of trees and a hillside. He turns and recalls the doctor driving up to the field. Joe stands still for a moment, then turns his head to look the way he has come. All is tranquil and Arcadian. He watches a boy in the distance flying a kite in the shape of a triangle. It swoops and whirls in the gentle breeze. The boy holding the winder steps back and to the side as he controls the kite. Joe recalls the doctor leaping from his car, racing into the field. He concentrates and imagines a young woman climbing out of the passenger side. He thinks again, and it's Jed who gets out of the car. At home, Claire comes upstairs carrying a mug of tea and a plate with toast on it. She sets them down by Joe. Sitting in a dressing gown, he's studying the palm of his hand.
Have I let you down?
She stares down at him, then folds her arms.
Sorry, what do you mean?
Do you think I've let you down?
He picks at his palm.
What do you mean?
He avoids her gaze and looks at the rope burn on his palm. She turns her head away. On a notice board, she spots photographs of balloons and handwritten notes and sketches. She purses her lips and lowers her head. Bicycles are chained up outside a college. A student centre, Joe exits. He makes his way down steps onto a paved campus. He looks out of the gates of the college as a bus passes. He sees a figure on the pavement across the road. It's Jed, munching into some food. Joe slips the strap of his briefcase over his shoulder and stands watching Jed, who turns and walks away. At home...
All your favourites?
Yeah.
A birthday cake sits on the kitchen worktop as Claire carries two dinner plates to the table.
Thank you.
There you go.
In a silky, sleeveless dress, she sits opposite Joe and stares at him.
You look lovely.
So do you.
Thank you. It's hot, be careful.
She reaches under the table.
I nearly forgot.
He looks at her as she hands him an envelope.
Happy birthday.
He stares at it, then turns it over and starts to open it.
Thank you very much.
She watches eagerly as he studies her homemade card.
That's beautiful, thank you. Thank you, Claire.
She smiles, and he stands it on the table.
Cheers.
Cheers to you. Thank you.
I love you.
I love you too.
Mmm, that's good.
They sip their red wine and turn to the food.
So we've got chilli sauce and soy sauce. Okay.
Using their fingers, they pick up battered prawns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hot.
She dips a prawn in soy sauce, then crunches into it. Mm. Claire looks up nervously as she eats. Joe avoids eye contact with her as he munches away on the prawns. Eventually, she raises her eyes to his somber face. He sits still, almost as if in a trance. The food on his plate is hardly touched. He sits morosely staring at the table. Claire's face grows taut, and she opens her mouth as if to speak. She glances at his plate and tenses. She turns away, then shifts in her seat. She sways back and forth, then gets to her feet and grabs the plates. She marches to the sink with them and scrapes the food into a blue wash hand basin.
I've had enough.
Joe remains at the table. He wipes his mouth with his hand. She turns to face him, then turns away, her eyes filled with tears. Joe fidgets and covers his mouth with his hand, then presses the bridge of his specs. Day, he swims underwater, his muscles rippling. He flips over, then he lowers himself vertically in the water. As silvery air bubbles float up from his mouth in the shimmering blue, he stretches out his arms in a crucifix position. He surfaces and wipes his eyes and sees a familiar figure looking in from an outside window. Joe hauls himself out of the pool.
Stay there! I need to talk to you! I need to talk! Stay there!
He watches as Jed holds up the newspaper article about Claire with her photograph. The headline is Face of the Future. In a cafe.
Just get over here.
Joe's sitting at a table. Jed's at the self-service counter. He selects a piece of watermelon.
Got melons.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Joe watches Jed, who's at the checkout.
That's Coke. And oh, and a Milky Way.
Jed joins Joe and sits opposite him.
So, don't you think we should talk?
I'm here, aren't I? What's there to talk about?
Well, perhaps we should talk about what happened in Oxford.
Oh, terrible business.
The man had died. Did you see him arrive?
You mean arrive at the end of the rope or arrive in the field? And if you mean arrive in the field, you mean the first time or the second time, if you know what I mean.
What? You tell me.
Jed looks at Joe through his blonde, straggly hair.
I remember we prayed. We knelt and prayed together, remember?
Yeah. Well, it was... I was humouring you.
You touched me on the shoulder and you looked at me, and the way you looked at me, I could tell you knew what had passed between us.
What passed between us?
Love.
The two men stare at each other, unblinking.
God's love.
For fuck's sake. You're mad.
Jed smiles.
That's what they said about Jesus once.
They also said it about a lot of mad people.
You see, I think it was a sign.
What was?
The balloon, the man, everything.
Well, what was it a sign of? What did it mean?
Well, as if God's hand had... reached down and grabbed that balloon and plucked it from the earth to bring that man to God and to bring us together. You see, God understands. He really does understand.
What were you doing there?
It was just meant to be, I suppose. Destiny.
In that field, outside Oxford, what were you doing? Were you following him?
Huh?
John Logan, were you following him?
No. I've never followed anyone in my life.
You know, I think you have.
Joe prepares a roll-up cigarette.
I was looking for my dog. I lost my dog.
Joe grins and nods his head.
He's very fond of the countryside. He likes the trees.
Yeah, well, I've never seen you with any dog.
That's because I lost him.
You know what I think?
Joe sticks the cigarette in his mouth and leans forward.
I think you're a bit lost.
He lights his cigarette.
I think everyone's a bit lost, aren't they?
I think you think that there's this sort of special bond between us because of what we went through. You think it somehow means something.
Well, everything means something to someone. Otherwise, there wouldn't be much point, would there? Everything happens for a reason.
He bites into his watermelon. As he munches into it, he starts laughing. He spits out a seed, puts the back of his hand to his mouth, then points a finger at Joe.
That thing with the curtains you keep doing. It's ingenious. Fucking mad, but ingenious.
What?
The way you hold them so delicately, so gentle. Gentle yet firm, you know, a firm grip, no messing around.
Jed brings his hands together, then apart as if drawing curtains.
Simple but effective. And just generally, you know, very, very loving.
Joe looks totally bemused by Jed's conversation.
Gonna trust
me. This is fucking stupid!
Joe, just hold on to it. We can't let go again. Not this time. Just hold on. Hold hold on. Look, if this is about Claire, we can work it out. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Joe's lips twitch as he glares at Jed. Jed lowers his gaze, then smiles coquettishly. Joe reaches out and takes something proffered by Jed.
Yeah.
He opens it. It's the birthday card Claire made for him. As Joe examines it, Jed looks up at him.
Why did you throw it away?
I didn't.
Then who did, Joe?
Where'd you get this?
I found it in the bin outside your house.
Joey.
Joe. Come on. Everything's gonna be all right. Forget about Claire. I'm here now.
Joe's lips quiver as he stares at the man sitting opposite him. Night. Joe's standing on the mezzanine at home. Claire is with their guests. Joe picks up the bottle of Dom Perignon he had in the field on the day of the balloon accident, replaces it on the wine rack, and selects a bottle of wine. Downstairs, Joe opens the bottle of wine watched by Claire, Robin, Rachel, Frank, and Natasha.
I've seen Natasha stop traffic.
Natasha's a pretty young blonde.
Actually stop traffic just by walking across the road. She doesn't even know she's doing it. Bikes ride into the back of buses, and buses miss their stops.
Natasha looks embarrassed.
Dog walkers plough unsuspecting dogs under cars. They can't help themselves. Can't stop staring at her.
Why? What's wrong with her?
I'm saying you have magnetism. Like a magnet. Do you know what a magnet is?
A refrigerator magnet.
It's physics, dear. Don't take me notice.
Natasha smiles and nods, uncomprehending.
No, it's not. Biology.
Joe slugs down some wine. The others stop smiling.
When we're in love, or when we think we're in love, we do the things we do to ensure good breeding, to ensure a fuck. We're just stupid organisms. It's meaningless.
Joe sits facing the others and shakes his head.
Don't even know why we fucking bother.
Rachel's moved over to snuggle up to Robin. Frank's sitting behind Natasha and Claire sitting on the end of the sofa. Joe lights a cigarette. He picks up a whiskey.
I think what Joe's trying to say is that to have an understanding of the science of love doesn't make it any less remarkable.
Yes, but most people don't need to understand the science of it, do they?
Joe draws on his cigarette.
I have no idea whatsoever what anybody's talking about.
Why don't you go upstairs, fetch your book, and we'll have a fucking recital, shall we?
Joe takes another puff on his cigarette, and Claire leans her head on her hand.
Love is like being under a spell. An extraordinary magic spell, and then, one day the spell is broken and the love just flies away like a bird.
A bird? What a bird is this?
Frank lays his hands on Natasha's shoulders and gently kisses the top of her head. Claire's eyes well with tears. Joe leans forward in his chair, his eyes fixed on Claire.
It was meant to be so special. I had it all planned. I brought champagne. I brought a ring.
They stare intently at each other.
I was going to propose to you.
Her head is still and her features frozen.
Well, that's let the cat out of the bag.
Have you changed your mind?
She watches and waits for a response. then closes her tear-filled eyes and smiles wryly. Claire presses her lips together.
Well,
she wipes her cheeks.
If you ever want to see two people turn into two-headed, fire-breathing monsters overnight, just put rings on their fingers.
No, it's right. It's right. Because you're an expert, aren't you, Brew? When you're not busy sexing up the au pair to within an inch of her life, you're a fucking authority, aren't you, pal? When you're not marching on Poland, you're a fucking sage. Tell me something, tell me, because this has always really, really bothered me. Do you never tire of letting your dick do the thinking?
Claire, hands clasped together under her chin, glares at Joe. Frank winces. Joe lies on top of the bed in semi-darkness. Claire's in the hall. She walks to the bedroom doorway. She looks over at Joe.
Do you realise how mad you sound?
He lies still, one arm across his chest.
To people like me, to normal people, you sound mad.
She turns and walks wearily away. His stomach rises and falls as he breathes. Day, he's in a lecture theatre filled with students. They shift awkwardly in their seats, turning to watch Joe as he stands staring out of a window with his steely blue eyes. He closes them, then opens them and half turns his body.
Yeah, okay.
He saunters down the class and faces them. He plays with his mouth and appears deep in thought.
When we fall out of love...
He paces along in front of the class.
What explains that? What? Just a misunderstanding? A communication breakdown?
He scratches his forehead.
And when we do fall in love with somebody who we're completely incompatible with, and it's all just tedious and horrible and terrible and just not going to work. I mean, why do we do that? Why do we do that? I mean, is this just an aberration? Are these people just deviants?
Somebody's humming. The students start to look behind them.
Has anybody got a question? Anybody? A view or an opinion, maybe? What I'd
be without you. Jed sits up at a desk and looks directly at Joe.
If you should ever leave me, then life would go on, believe me.
Jed rises.
The world would show nothing to me.
He walks to Joe.
So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be.
Joe charges down a crowded stairwell. Jed chases him outside.
Hey, come on, look. I was just having a bit of fun, man. Come on. I was just trying to cheer you up.
Joe!
I was trying to cheer you up. Come on. Joe.
Listen to me. If you ever fucking bother me again, if you ever come anywhere fucking near me, I will follow you, I will find you, and I will gut you like a fucking fish. Do you understand me?
Joe releases him.
You started this. You made this happen. Why don't you admit it? You pretend it's not happening. Nothing's happening, you fuck! Giving me all your secret fucking signals so I come towards you? Why don't you leave me alone, eh? What do you want? What do you want? I love you! I love you! And you're trying to fucking destroy me! God only knows where I'd be without you!
Jed strides away from a shocked Joe. Students on the campus, including some from his class, look on, dumbfounded. Joe takes off his glasses, wipes his face and heads back. Spud tries to talk to him, but he shrugs him off. Night. Claire's lying asleep in bed. Beside her, Joe is sitting up. Claire wakes and she sits up beside him. He has his right hand up to his haunted-looking face, the tip of the little finger tucked into his mouth. His head is shaking slightly. She watches him. Downstairs, Joe slams down a bottle of whiskey and picks up a glass with a hefty measure in it. He meanders over to the window, sets down his glass, and pulls open the curtains. He stands and stares out at the pouring rain. He looks up and touches the curtains. At the computer, he does a search for curtains and stalking. He speed reads about fear of stalking and harassment, and Marie of London, stalker waited for curtain signal. Stalking a product of isolation, do you want to know more? Fixed beliefs. You cannot run away from the way I feel about you. The royal family has been a target of stalkers, amongst the articles one with the headline, Secret Love Message. Joe takes all this in. He goes to the bedroom.
Claire, wake up. Claire, wake up. I've got it. I know what he's doing. He keeps on going on about curtains.
And there was this stalker, who actually existed. She used to wait outside...
It's a documented case. Now, she thought, right, that the king was madly in love with her. He was signalling with... Right, okay.
Joe's at the window.
Wait for me. Don't tell anybody. I love you. Now, the king, now, he didn't see her because, yeah, well, he's a fucking king, isn't he? So she thought... It was a conspiracy.
You know, you do when you sort of like, however much he denied.
She took it as proof that he loved her, proof that their destinies were completely intertwined, and that one day they were going to be together.
Claire sits up woozily.
I fucking cracked it.
Oh my god.
He opens the curtains and sees Jed in the street below.
Fuck, he's there.
Claire still sitting on the bed.
Claire? Oh, look. He's just sitting there. Claire, come on, look at this. Fucking hell. Come here. Come and look. He's there. Come and look.
Outside in the rain, Jed is sitting on top of the spherical climbing frame in the park. Inside on the bed, Claire sits as if in a daze.
Well...
Joe watches stupefied as Claire rubs her eyes, then her forehead. Her head is drooped. She looks up at him, then lies back down, pulling the duvet up to her chest and throwing her arm over her head.
Come to bed.
Joe just stares at her figure tucked up in bed. Day. Joe in jeans, shirt and jacket stands in front of a living room window looking out. He watches Claire, wrapped up in a long raincoat, pull the coat tight as she strides away from the house in the pouring rain. Claire's studio sits empty. Joe opens the door and slowly moves inside. Down to shirt sleeves, he makes his way across the large room, past a large bust to a set of shelves. He peers down at one, then picks up a conker from it. He drops it back on the shelf, then watches it spin around till it stops. His eyes seem to examine every inch of the room. He makes his way back across, shaking his head. Joe rolls his shoulders, tightens them, then releases them. He stares at the bust of Robin sitting on a work desk. The angle of the head is tilted to one side in a typical Robin pose. Joe wanders through the studio, hands in his jean pockets. He saunters through a small room in a darker part of the studio, then moves into the light by a window. On another worktop, a portfolio with a picture of green leaves on its cover. He opens it. Inside are sketches and photos of him, with and without his spectacles. He scrutinizes the contents closely. He raises his head and sees something all covered up. He starts to unwrap it. removes the polythene covering and turns the partly sculpted bust round. It's of him. He studies the features, the lips tightly shut, the spectacles, the somber expression. He turns on hearing the door. He moves away from the window to see Claire.
What's this?
It's my work.
The partially completed bust behind him, he stares at her through the doorway. Her hair is swept back tightly. Her eyes don't engage his. Then she looks up at him.
It's over.
She lowers her eyes and turns away.
Claire. All right, then let's get married then, shall we? Let's get married. Let's get married and have lots of children. Let's have dozens of the fuckers and a big dog move to the country. See what fucking good it does. See how long we last. What do we need?
He upsets a trolley of artist's tools.
Here! Is this what you want?
What?
Is this what you want? Here, look!
He grabbed her hand and slipped a metal ring on her finger. He releases her and marches out, leaving her in tears. She tries to take off the ring. Outside, he strides along the pavement, his teeth gritted and his jaw clenched. He marches in the rain to the play park opposite the house. He spins round in the middle of the park, his shirt and hair drenched. He raises his head and stares at the rain-laden skies. Joe's in a telephone shop calling Mrs. Logan.
I need to find the men who are at the balloon. Do you have contact addresses?
Yes, I've got the addresses. All the witnesses.
Great.
The police gave them
to
me.
That's all I need.
Mrs. Logan sits on her kitchen table and toys with the phone. Joe walks along a street past a building with graffiti-covered boards outside. He stops just beyond it, looks up, then moves to the door as a guy reading some mail comes out. Joe beckons him to move and goes inside the building. Joe makes his way up a dingy stairwell. The steps are filthy. There's rubbish piled on a half landing. The paintwork is damp and blotchy. Joe climbs the stairs and on a landing reaches a door with a pile of newspapers stacked outside it. He stands in the middle of the landing and looks around. Then he glances down at the piece of paper in his hand and pushes the already open door. Joe enters a dark hallway. He moves towards a doorway leading into a room with a window on the far side. He immediately sees a tiny hot air balloon silhouetted against the sunlight streaming in. Inside, he glances right and sees a sofa, papers and books strewn over the floor. He strolls on past a partition. On the other side, he finds a mug and an almost empty milk bottle and a single unmade bed. Magazines and papers litter the room. On a shelf, a small aquarium with no fish visible in it. Joe looks at the small hot air balloon. It's a lampshade, with a small basket underneath. On the wall opposite Joe, there's a picture of a balloon. He walks across, spotting it, and the whole wall covered in photos of balloons, newspaper cuttings, the photograph Jed took of him in the bookshop, other photos of him, and scrawled over and over again in red, Joe and Jed Morrissey, and Joe, Joe, Joe. Joe pulls down receipts and wrappers stuck to the wall. Then he stops as he comes across the photo of Claire from the paper. Its eyes are gouged out. He rips it down and picks up a chair leg lying on a shelf. He smashes everything on the shelf. Joe strides into the living room area, then on into the dark kitchen, the chair leg still in his hand.
Oh, Joe. Please, please, please,
don't do this. Please,
fuck you!
Please, I love you.
Jed's cowering on the floor.
That's all that matters now, Joe. That's all that matters.
Joe swings the chair leg up like a baseball bat.
That's all that matters, Joe.
Jed rises to stand against the wall, his torso naked. Joe, shaking, keeps the chair leg poised.
The thing is...
Joe makes as if to strike.
I'm just trying to help you, Joe. Because... Really, you're just like me.
Jed gazes earnestly through his straggly blonde hair at the man with the chair leg raised above his shoulder. Joe, his glasses sitting halfway down his nose, blinks and his lips quiver.
How am I like you?
I'm lonely. You know what that's like.
Joe, his teeth clenched, turns the chair leg in his hands and lifts it a little higher. Jed flinches, closes his eyes and rests the side of his head on the wall. Joe lowers his arms. Leaving the chair leg on the floor where it's fallen, Joe stares at Jed, then turns away. He grins and shakes his head as he walks out of the kitchen. Jed opens his eyes. A light shines in. He closes them again, then gently hits the side of his head against the wall. In a bar, Joe lights a cigarette, then downs a scotch. In front of him are two small glasses and a half-drunk pint. In his kitchen, Jed repeatedly bangs his head against the wall. On a window ledge, a crucifix leans against the glass. In the bar, Joe continues to down whiskey. He examines his right hand. There's blood on the side of it. He gulps down more whiskey and gestures for another. He picks tobacco from his tongue, then smiles.
What have I done?
What have I done?
The side of his hand is gashed. He sits alone at the counter of the bar.
What the fuck have I done? What the fuck have I done?
The barmaid ignores him as he chortles. Night. Outside, he finishes urinating against the side of a building. He strolls across a street in the rain, past parked cars, as a van drives along the street. He walks up a path to a house with a porch. He knocks at the door. Rachel opens it.
Hi.
Joe.
He's in shirt sleeves and soaked.
Can I come in?
What a lovely surprise.
Can I come in?
Look, I'm at
coffee. Oh, would you sit down?
He's bumped a low lamp over the table.
Ooh. Stay there and I'll get you some coffee.
Who's this, then? Who's this? It's Uncle Joe, isn't it? What's he been up to, eh? Silly old Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe's just spent a very long time in the pub.
Shall I phone Claire?
Yeah.
Robin's carrying the baby.
Hold this.
What? No.
Joe nervously takes the baby and holds her under the arms, the baby's feet on Joe's knees.
Why don't you sit there?
He turns the baby round and sits her on the edge of the table.
Hello.
The baby grins at Joe as Rachel comes through with coffee. She sets down the mug.
She smiled at me.
Don't get excited, she's just hungry. It's biology, remember?
No, it's not. It's not biology. Fantastic.
Rachel watches him, then goes. Robin reappears.
She actually thinks it might be a good idea if you,
go and get your things. Now?
No. Not now, no. Just, tomorrow.
Joe sits cuddling the baby. Robin sits beside him and Rachel comes back to sit at the table opposite Joe.
Really fucked this up, haven't I?
Yeah, I think you probably have, also.
Joe looks morose and lowers his head. The three adults sit in awkward silence. The children in the background watch TV. The screen goes black. Morning. Joe wakes on Rachel and Robin's sofa. Light filters through the partially opened curtains and casts a leafy shadow on a wall. Joe has his spectacles in his hands. He glares at them, then slips them on. He sits looking thoughtful, his face unshaven. In the bathroom, he robotically brushes his teeth. On the shelf, a kiddie Superman toothbrush holder. Later, Robin finds him sitting on the coffee table, lacing his shoes.
Morning.
Hello.
Cup of tea, slice of toast, rusk.
No, I better be off.
Do bring your stuff back here, you know, if you like.
Do you know, I mean, presuming you don't manage to sort it all out.
Oh, no, I'm going to sort it out. Don't worry. I'm going to sort it all out.
Robin looks up at Joe and nods his head.
Right.
Robin leaves the baby in a high chair and goes to the phone.
Oh, hi. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Joe replaces the cushions on the sofa. Robin pokes his head round.
It's Claire. She says somebody called Jed has turned up. Jez or Jed.
In slow motion, Joe runs out of the house, down the short path and along the pavement. A car moves off from the curb. A fir tree-shaped air freshener hangs from the mirror as Joe drives across town. He shouts at traffic and speeds up. Joe parks the car and races to the front door. He inserts a key. He selects the right one and runs frantically upstairs inside the building. He tears up the stairs, the white-painted brick walls flashing past him. Flower pots sit on a window ledge. He reaches the front door. He walks into the pristine flat and sees Claire and Jed sitting on the sofa at the far side of the living room. He stands and stares at them. Jed, in a dressing gown, glares at Joe. Jed's face is cut and bruised.
You could have killed me.
Joe stands rooted to the spot.
You could have just left me. You didn't have to beat the shit out of me.
Right.
Leave it.
Joe advances on Jed.
Please.
What she said. I told her how you'd led me on.
Shut up.
How you teased me and then...
Shut up.
Dumped me.
Shut up! Shut up!
He had a signal. He used to signal by opening, closing the curtains. It meant he wanted to see me. It meant you weren't at home. It meant everything.
What have you done?
I didn't touch him. Do you believe I did this? Do you?
Claire, on her feet, has her hands together. She drops them to her side and sits back down beside Jed. Jed places a comforting arm on her back. Joe watches, stunned. He stares at them for a long moment.
Fuck this.
As Joe storms off, Jed grows panicky.
Joe!
He runs to the bedroom.
Joey, I'll tell you what I thought, right? I thought you'd make her so jealous that you'd make her go away. I just wanted her to go away so we could be together. I mean, she's so fucking manipulative. Joe, I mean, what a fucking bitch! What a bitch!
In the kitchen.
Look, Joe, watch!
Jed picks up a knife and stabs Claire with it. He faces Joe. Claire sinks to the floor.
See?
She lies down on her side, clutching her stomach.
It's easy.
See, Joe.
Blood covers almost the full length of the broad kitchen knife. The two men stare at each other.
It's all right now. It's done. It's done now. Come here.
Joe holds his hand out towards Jed.
Jed. Give me the knife and I'll wash it off.
Jed smiles at Joe.
You're gonna kill me. No. No, I'm not.
Please.
Blood drips from the knife.
You were so much in love. I know, I can tell. Doesn't matter anymore.
Claire, clutching her wound, looks up at Joe, who keeps his hand stretched out.
Come here. Come on.
Jed moves closer to Joe and takes his hand. He grasps it tightly.
Joey.
The knife is still in his right hand. Jed moves close to Joe, their faces only inches apart. They stare into each other's eyes.
There's no such thing as love, you said. It's just biology, you said. That's all it is. Just science. I love you, Jed. Oh, I've always loved you. I love you too.
Jed lowers his eyes. His lips tremble.
Let go now. Let go now.
Jed's face crumples.
Is that what you want, Joe? Oh. You want me to let go?
Their lips move close, then Jed kisses Joe. Joe responds, his mouth moving. He raises his hand. He plunges the knife in Jed's hand into Jed's stomach. Joe breaks free from Jed, who's bent double. He runs past Claire. She is lying in an ever-increasing pool of blood. Joe kneels down beside her, a phone in his hand. Joe places his hand tenderly on her back as she lies face down. Joe raises his head and looks across the room. The same wide, sloping green field in the middle of the countryside where it all began, under a bright but cloudy sky. Joe stands in the middle of it with Mrs. Logan. He points up to the sky. They both turn as a car pulls up on the roadside.
Oh my God, there she is. Is that her?
A blonde woman climbs out and a man.
She's got someone with her. What is that, her dad?
The woman folds her arms and the man slips his in hers as they stride into the field towards the other two, the dense woods and rolling hills in the distance. The stiff breeze ruffles Mrs. Logan's hair as she turns to Joe.
I'm sorry, I don't think I can get through this.
Wait. Just let's see what they've got to say.
Mrs. Logan's daughter Katie and her dog run up. Mrs. Logan takes Katie's hand. The couple come right up to the group.
Mrs. Logan, the scarf is mine. Picnic was ours, too.
We left it in your husband's car after he very kindly offered us a lift. We'd set out for a picnic, and my car broke down. Your husband stopped and offered us a lift. Then we saw the balloon and your husband stopped again and ran to help. I didn't know what to do because of all these people all trying to help. And suddenly it all went horribly wrong.
So we got out of the car and
we just ran away.
The blonde-haired woman can't look at Mrs. Logan. The man stares.
Penny is one of my students. We kept it secret until now. We had to, but I know this is it. It'll be pretty ugly for everyone, but we're ready for that. We're in love. quite madly, deeply in love.
Mrs. Logan's face creases.
I'm so, so sorry. Can you forgive us for being so selfish?
Yes, of course I can. Of course I can forgive you. Who's going to forgive me?
They look at her quizzically. She leans down and kisses Katie's head. They walk away, leaving Joe, his face filled with anguish, deep in thought. Later, he walks with Katie and the dog.
Were you frightened when the balloon went up into the sky?
Yes. Yes, I was pretty frightened.
Why did you let go?
Well, we all let go. We had to. You see, all the men holding on to the balloon let go. Apart from your dad. But that's because your dad was such a brave man.
He was pretty brave.
For a long time, I was worried that I was the one who let go first. But in fact, we all pretty much let go at the same time. And the important thing is that your dad didn't let go. He hung on. He kept on hanging on, even when the balloon went right up into the sky, right up to the top of...
Bloody hell.
Bloody well, right.
The dog wanders off. Watching them from the roadside is Claire, her long hair over her shoulders, a coat on and a scarf looped around her neck. Joe looks up and sees her. She walks towards him with the aid of a stick. She kneels in the field and he sits beside her.
How did it go?
Okay. Well, okay.
He holds her walking stick and looks up at her. Two birds circle them.
How's the flat?
Small. Dark. Cold, damp. Lonely.
Good, I'm glad.
They're on the grass a few feet apart. Joe looks straight ahead. He lays down her walking stick and gets to his knees. He reaches for his shoulder bag and unzips it. He pulls out the bottle of champagne he had that fateful day. She watches him as he removes the wire from around the cork and twists the bottle. He pours the champagne into a plastic tumbler she's holding, then some for himself. She watches him. He nervously scratches his nose and cheek, then pushes up his specs. She looks away and sips her champagne.
I'm still. I still.
Don't, Joe.
Her head is bent and her eyes almost closed. He gazes longingly at her. A strand of her hair lies over her left eye.
I made it so complicated.
She raises her head and stares at him.
And it doesn't need to be complicated. It's not complicated. It's really...
Her head still up. She avoids his gaze.
I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything. Don't say anything.
She raises her tumbler to her lips and drinks. The two of them remain still in the middle of the field, with the woods, the hills and the roads around them. The clouds barely move in the blue sky above them. ITFC audio description by Lonnie Evans and James O'Hara was voiced by James Apted. Directed by Roger Michell, produced by Kevin Loder. Screenplay by Joe Penhall, from the novel by Ian McEwan. Daniel Craig, Rhys Evans, Samantha Morton, Enduring Love. Bill Nighy, Susan Lynch, Helen McCrory, Andrew Lincoln, Corin Redgrave. Executive producers, Françoise Ivanel, Cameron McCracken, Duncan Reed, Tessa Ross. Associate producer, Ian McEwan. Line producer, Rosa Romero. Director of photography, Harris Zambalukas. Film editor, Nicholas Gaster, GEFE. Production designer, John Paul Kelly. Costume designer, Natalie Ward. Hair and makeup designer, Connie Daniel. Music by Jeremy Sams. Casting by Mary Selway and Fiona Weir. A large man strolls through a crowded recreational room. One man leans against a wall, rocking back and forth. Others play table tennis. In a room with pastel walls, Jed sits at a desk by a barred window, writing. His hair is slightly shorter and off his face. He stops writing, turns, and smiles. Cast in order of appearance. Joe, Daniel Craig. Claire, Samantha Morton. Grandfather, Bill Weston. Boy in Balloon, Jeremy McCurdy. John Logan, Lee Sheward. Farmer, Nick Wilkinson. Jed, Rhys Evans. Robin, Bill Nighy. Rachel, Susan Lynch. Robin and Rachel's twins, Aoife and Rory Carroll. Spud, Ben Whishaw. Frank, Justin Salinger. TV producer, Andrew Lincoln. Mrs. Logan, Helen McCrory. Katie Logan, Rosanna Michelle. Katie Logan's friend, Ella Doyle. Girl in Logan's car, Felicity DeJoux. Natasha Alexandra Aitken. Penny Anna Maxwell Martin. Professor Corin Redgrave. Logan's dog, Algie. Assistant producer, Katie Bullock Webster. Production coordinator, Steffi Marion. Assistant production coordinator, Josh Hyams. Production assistant, Liam Beatty. Location manager, Jonah Coombs. Unit manager, Josh Yudkin. Assistant Location Manager, Sam Latter. Production Accountants, John Duncan Guy Barker. Assistant Production Accountants, Rob Seeger and Marie Gormley. First Assistant Director, Barry McCulloch. Second Assistant Director, Olivia Peniston Bird. Third Assistant Directors, Paul Mace Mason, Adam Coop. Front Runners, Stacey Cragg, Ophaya Nkrumah. Camera Operator, Simon Baker. First Assistant Camera, Hamish Doyne Ditmus. Second Assistant Camera, Sally Lowe. B Camera Operator, Luke Redgrave. Music orchestrated and conducted by Christopher Austin. Music Editor, Emily Rogers. Music performed by Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. Orchestra recorded at Angel Recording Studios. Music engineered by Gary Thomas. Assistant Engineer, Jan McCulloch. Music copyists, Luke Bedford, Bob Broadley. Composer's Assistant, Tim Sutton. God Only Knows, written by Brian Wilson and Tony Asher, published by Random Music London Limited, courtesy of Sea of Tunes Pub Company. Naima, performed by John Coltrane, written by John Coltrane, published by Universal Island Music Limited, on behalf of Jalcol Music Incorporated, licensed courtesy of Warner Strategic Marketing UK. The filmmakers wish to express their thanks to Berghaus, Clos de Pape, Jordan Goldspink, Judd Books, Mistral Wines, Moët Hennessy UK, Santa Barbara, The Kilcoy Company, The Guardian, Time Out, To Die For, Josephine and Mike at Salvo's. Filmed in England on the Walmsley Estate, Buckinghamshire, in Oxford, and on locations in London including Tate Modern and Tate Britain. Kodak Motion Picture Film, Fujifilm, the logos for Panavision and Dolby Digital in selected theatres, made with the support of the National Lottery through the UK Film Council. The logos for Pathé, Inside Track, Ingenious Media and Film 4, produced by Inside Track 2 LLP on behalf of Pathé, a free-range films production for Pathé Pictures, Film 4 and Inside Track 2 LLP. Copyright Pathé Fund Limited 2004. Distributed by Pathé. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. The story, all names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. No animals were harmed during the making of this film. For Mary Selway, 1936 to 2004.